Hi, I'm Nick. I'm getting married today. I'm also a firefighter and first responder. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I can make it to my ceremony to start the next chapter of my life.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Hey, what do you want to da-da-da?
I don't know. What do y'all think we should da-da-da?
Well, what did we da yesterday?
Yesterday. All the dolls feel like the same doll these days.
I know.
Like, is today Monday or Tuesday?
Today is Thursday.
Oh, no, I forgot to call my mom on her birthday.
Oh, no.
These days, nothing is normal and everything is weird. But you could still save big when you switch to Progressive. That won't change. Not da-da or any da.
Quote da-da at Progressive.com.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Capital Calculus, the show which focuses on the intersection of politics and economics, something that is critical in democracies like India, especially in influencing what the little guy gets or does not get. Every week, this show will explore this intersection to try and give you a fresh perspective on the week that was. I am your host, Anil Padmanabhan. Last week, the foreign ministers of India and China met in Moscow. They declared a truce, promised to end the brinksmanship. All good. But the obvious question is whether this will hold up. To be honest, the odds are stacked against it. For one, there is no sign of de-escalation. Second, the history of Chinese perfidy, doublespeak, and record against India makes them hard to trust. So the India-China face-off is not an easy nut to crack. Lots of questions, very few answers. Exactly why I spoke to Nitin Gokhale. He's a longtime fellow journalist specializing in strategic affairs, has authored half a dozen books on military history, insurgencies and wars. He now owns and runs two digital platforms, BharatShakti.in and StratNewsGlobal.com, both on strategic affairs. I began by asking him on his thoughts about the Moscow truce.
Well, certainly it's good news given the very high tensions on the border. And it's never a good idea to have troops well-armed and well-acclimatized facing each other, not too far away from each other. So certainly, yes, it's good news to begin with.
But the big question is, will this truce hold up? Remember, we have had three firing incidents in the last 20 days along the line of actual control.
Well, I'm slightly skeptical about it holding up. My sense is because nothing has happened in the past week or so, it's all very quiet. So I sometimes feel, as somebody who's looked at this even from the ground, that is it lull before the storm? Will China attempt some quid pro quo, as they call it in the military parlance, that they will go and occupy some unheld areas, India having done that on 29th, 30th August, before they agree on the core commander level meeting dates. That something cannot be ruled out, because clearly the PLA hasn't come in such large numbers and for such a long time, now almost 4 months, over 4 months in fact, go back without extracting some concessions. So that's my worry.
The weather clock is running down. You know, they are really sub-zero temperatures where both these sides are ranged against each other. So is that good news or bad news? Meaning, will it force the hand of China? Like you rightly just pointed out, they are desperate for results. So do you see that this could go the other way? Instead of them retreating.
It could go the other way because remember, every time there's been an action, and 62 war actually was initiated on 20th October 1962 because the campaigning season, as they call it in those places, is essentially until mid-November. Then the window closes. So this is actually a very tricky time and a period for India because it has to be completely on guard against any Chinese advance or attack or an offensive action, because this is the only time they can do it. Later, it will become very difficult post 15 November. So we are speaking mid-September. So essentially, there are 2 months window that the Chinese have. Now, whether they will utilize this to de-escalate, disengage, or they will come and occupy some unheld places and then sit through the winter for the negotiations to resume post-winter or during the winter for as a bargaining chip. That's something that worries Indian planners.
It will be prudent at this stage to try and understand the Chinese psyche. Very important when you're dealing with them. For this, I drew on an earlier interview with Gautam Bambawale, a former ambassador to China. Gautam laid it out bare for us.
Let me try to answer it in a manner which will bring out the differences between the way China thinks and India thinks. Firstly, let me say that, you know, one of the founding principles of India's philosophy as a civilization is what is referred to as Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, that the world is one family. So we believe that the world is one family and that we should get along with this family, different parts of the family, different family members. In fact, this kind of philosophy also led to India being colonized by the British and we becoming a colony of British imperialism. On the contrary, the Chinese philosophy can be summarized in the name of China. The country China in Chinese is called Chungguo, which is roughly translated as Middle Kingdom or Middle Country. So the Chinese idea is that they are the middle of the world. They are the middle of the earth. And everything revolves around them. So they have a very self-centric view of everything. They have a very selfish view of everything, if you want. And they are totally self-absorbed. So you can see that there are two differing philosophies of our two different civilizations and now of our two different nation states. And I think it is very important for people in India to realize that there are these differences which can explain many things on the ground.
From Gautam, we understood the logic behind China's aggression. It doesn't mean we agree with the Chinese. It is probably the right time to get an expert like Nitin to weigh in on the downside risks of this face-off, especially if the impasse is unresolved. There are two armed armies and no one willing to blink. A number of questions that we want answered. If indeed there's a conflict, how will it play out? Will it remain localized or degenerate into a broader conflict? Listen in.
No, I don't think there's a risk of degenerating into a larger battle. Essentially, because what China actually wants, if you look at the behavior of the PLA troops and the pattern of deployment since May, it is essentially to coerce India militarily, intimidate Indian forces by deploying in large numbers, bringing in artillery and tanks in broad daylight, and then deploying them indiscriminately. Military observers tell me, those who are deeply into this, that the Chinese deployments make no attempt to camouflage their positions or even hide what they have brought. So essentially, it's more a demonstration of the force and the platforms that are available to them. And they thought that India will back down or India will back down by a show of force, which hasn't happened. And I always say this, that the Chinese are very good at set pieces, meaning if we take a footballing analogy, then they're good at taking free kicks, dead ball. But when the opponent starts dribbling or doing unexpected moves, then they are at a loss to respond or evolve strategies. Therefore, this is something that they are currently facing. That's their dilemma right now.
Where does it leave Pakistan? Are they going to use this moment to get adventurous?
Well, they might want to. But they do not have the stomach for doing this. They might do some maneuvers here and there, but I think they've been bottled up pretty well.
So do you think they were surprised in their gaming of what India would do or not do?
Oh, indeed, they are surprised because even if they were testing India's resolve as well as preparedness, they were not prepared for such a quick response and what is called now mirror deployment. If they have, assuming they have brought in 20,000 people all across eastern Ladakh, India has got maybe similar numbers on India's side of the LAC. And the quickness with which these people were deployed has certainly surprised them. And more than anything else, I think the Galwan clash, which was a premeditated attack on Indian, unsuspecting Indian soldiers, and the ferocity of the counterattack by the Indians has actually caught them by surprise, and it is sending huge ripples within the PLA.
You follow strategic affairs very closely. So I'm sure it's not just India and China. Every country in the world must be following this conflict because they must be also gaming the strengths and weaknesses of both sides, you know, kind of sizing them up because it's a great opportunity. Do you agree or how do you see that?
Oh, no, of course. This is going to be a seminal moment in a way in geopolitics. If you recall what happened in 2017 on a smaller scale at Dolom or Doklam, as it is more popularly known as, when India sort of stood up and forced China to withdraw after 72 days of the standoff. I think the smaller nations took the cue in Southeast Asia, in South Asia. And of course, the West analyzed it that India has a new policy. And I sort of encapsulate it in one sentence. Resolute on the border and reasonable in diplomacy has been India's approach since then, or even before that in 2014, when there was another standoff in southeastern Ladakh. When President Xi was visiting India on his first visit. That was his first visit to India. So that was there. So they are certainly, I think, military planners, strategists, analysts, universities, think tanks, everybody is watching. All other militaries are watching the way India is responding and India is standing up to the challenge that has been posed by China. So I think it's a fascinating time for those who watch this space. And it's not ending so soon, despite the initial promise.
So you heard Nitin. The problem with China will not go away soon. There's an obvious downside. The longer this impasse persists, more the risks of a violent conflict. Hardly the desirable distraction for either country. And spare a thought for the soldiers. Holding up in such inclement weather conditions, which will only worsen as the winter sets in. As the aggressor, the ball is in China's court. It has to ask itself whether all of this is worth it. That's all for today. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Do share your feedback and ideas. You can reach me on Twitter at Capital Calculus or on Facebook and Instagram at HT Smartcast. I'll be back next week with a new episode of Capital Calculus. Till then, stay safe.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.